John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, August 13, 2012. Israel to construct 12 towers in an East Jerusalem settlement, meanwhile Palestinians killed in 1991, buried today in the West Bank. These stories and more are coming up, stay tuned. Israeli authorities approved the construction of 12 towers in the Har Humah settlement built on Abu Ghneim Hill at the southern side of Jerusalem. The new towers will include 24 to 33 stories with an area that mounts up to 1 million square meters. The Israeli news website News One reported Monday that some of the towers will be used for tourism and commercial purposes. In addition, some space will be designated to new offices for the municipality of Jerusalem. According to the source, the new project will provide some 40,000 jobs. The entire settlement of Har Humah poses a serious threat to Bethlehem and Jerusalem on both economic and demographic levels. In other news, the regional electricity company has started procedures to seize the property of the Jerusalem District Electricity Company, JDEC, which provides electricity to the Jerusalem District that includes East Jerusalem, Ramallah, Jericho, and Bethlehem areas. Official at the JDEC said the company has $100 million debt to the Israeli company. Most of the debts results from unpaid usage of electricity by the Palestinian refugees, since the refugees are among the poorest sectors of the Palestinians who are under the supervision of the United Nations Relief and Work Agency, UNRWA. The director of the company demanded the Palestinian Authority to intervene to help solve this problem. At least 1 million Palestinians will be directly affected with this procedure. Two Palestinians, one Muslim and one Christian, who were killed by the Israeli army on November 11, 1991, and whose bodies were held at the Cemetery of Numbers, were buried today after Israel agreed to release their remains. The two, Ramzi Shaheen and Anis Musa, topped Israel's wanted list from the beginning of the First Intifada in 1987 for their activities in the popular uprising in Palestine. They managed to leave Palestine through Sinai to receive military training at an undisclosed location, and on their way back to the country, they were killed in an armed confrontation with Israeli soldiers in the Negev Desert. Earlier in June, Palestinians held an official ceremony for prayers and burial of 91 Palestinians killed by Israel many years ago and buried in the cemetery of Nablus. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, August 13th, daily news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassan Kassis and me, George Ishmael. Two civilians injured, one critically, on Friday as Israeli soldiers attacked anti-wall protests organized in a number of West Bank communities. IMEMC's Ghassan Bannoura with the details.
On Friday, anti-wall protests were organized at the village of Kfar Kadum, northern West Bank, in addition to Bil'in, Na'lin, and Nabi Saleh in central West Bank. The southern West Bank village of Al-Masra also organized a protest against the wall this week as well. Two civilians were injured on Friday in Kfar Kadum when Israeli troops fired tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets at the villagers and their international supporters. Soldiers stopped the Kfar Kadum protesters at the entrance of the village, then fired tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets at them. One young man was critically injured in the head by a tear gas bomb, and another man was injured in his leg by a rubber-coated steel bullet. Many others were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. In central West Bank, troops also used tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets against Bil'in, Na'lin, and Nabi Saleh and their international and Israeli supporters. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation at all three locations. Elsewhere on Friday in southern West Bank, Al-Masra villagers organized their weekly anti-wall protest. Israeli forces stationed at the village entrance forced people back into the village using rifle butts and batons. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Ghassan Bannoura.
You may remember the Gaza aid convoys that were attacked by Israel in 2010 and bottled up in a Greek harbor last year. Now some activists from Norway are preparing another ship to Gaza, occupied Palestine, the SV Estelle. They sailed from Oslo, Norway on the 7th of August and plan to reach Gaza in October, hopefully joined by other ships. Like previous Gaza aid convoys, they will attempt to break Israel's blockade of the besieged Gaza Strip. The activists aboard the SV Estelle plan to use nonviolent resistance only if they are boarded by Israel. In 2010, in an act of maritime piracy, Israeli commandos boarded a Turkish ship in international waters that was part of another Gaza relief convoy. 9 people were killed by Israeli commandos in that illegal raid in international waters. All these convoys attempt to deliver medical supplies and humanitarian aid, not arms and soldiers, yet the Israeli Navy acts like they're an armada of warships carrying an invasion force. Despite the history of repeated attacks on aid relief convoys to Gaza, these courageous Norwegian activists will not be deterred. Afghanistan, 13th of August. An Afghan police officer opened fire on NATO troops. None were killed this time, the fifth such attack in just 1 week. The Taliban claimed a cop had been in contact with him. Afghanistan, 10th of August. An Afghan worker at a U.S. military base suddenly opened fire, killing 3 U.S. Marines. Afghanistan, 9th of August. 3 U.S. soldiers were killed by an Afghan police commander named Asadullah in Helmand Province. He had invited U.S. Special Forces soldiers to dinner at a house to break the Ramadan fast and both a police commander and others wearing Afghan government uniforms opened fire. Afghanistan, 9th of August. Two Afghan soldiers opened fire on a group of NATO troops outside a military base in eastern Afghanistan. No foreign forces were killed, but one of the attackers was killed as NATO forces shot back. Afghanistan, 9th of August. A suicide bomber killed three U.S. soldiers and an American aid worker in Kunar province. Afghanistan, 9th of August. The British military is reporting the death of a British soldier from an unspecified insurgent attack in a Nad Ali district, Helmand province, Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 10th of August. The British military is reporting another death of a British soldier from an insurgent attack in Nadi Ali district, Helmand province, on Friday, the 10th of August. Afghanistan, 11th of August. An Afghan police officer suspected of being a Taliban infiltrator opened fire on and killed 11 other Afghan cops. Mr. Barack Obama, not only have Afghan soldiers and police been killing supposed foreign allied troops since before you took office, they've been doing this since the days it was Soviet soldiers being killed. The Russians were unable to defeat the Afghans, the U.S. can't do it either. Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On the West Coast, FBI Joint Terrorism Task Forces and heavily armed SWAT cops raided a Seattle home on the 10th of July looking for anarchist literature and have served several grand jury subpoenas as part of a fishing expedition into anarchists on the West Coast. Communiques from anarchists have compared this investigation to the Inquisition and its witchcraft trials. In the first week of August, there was a wave of punitive attacks on courthouses and police facilities around the nation, striking back at those responsible for grand juries and their subpoenas. Here is a list of some of the punitive strikes. Seattle, 2nd of August. A large group of protesters gathered at the courthouse to support those threatened by the grand jury subpoenas. Seattle, 3rd of August. Anarchist fighters smashed the windows and battered down the doors at a Seattle municipal courthouse. Anarchist literature was left inside, since they seem to be so interested in investigating anarchists. August 2nd, Milwaukee. Anarchist fighters smashed three police cars in an arrest wagon, and signs at a pizza shop were changed to read, "Suicide Our Cops," a reference to a former hardcore band. The next day, the Obama campaign headquarters had its windows smashed as well. San Francisco, 2nd of August. Anarchists slashed police car tires and etched the windows with acid. Madison County, Illinois, 3rd of August. Anarchists spray painted graffiti on the courthouse door. Atlanta, Georgia, 5th and 6th of August. Anarchist fighters used hammers and industrial glue to destroy every parking meter on Edgewood Avenue in the old Fourth Ward neighborhood of Atlanta for a total of 45 dead parking meters. On a nearby wall visible from the meters, they added painted graffiti condemning the grand jury and the six subpoenas that are part of the fishing expedition against anarchists. The next day, a banner condemning grand juries was dropped over Freedom Parkway. Asheville, North Carolina, 2nd of August. Protesters held a noisy protest within earshot of inmates at the jail after protesting at the site of a new, larger jail under construction. In addition, here is part of a statement released by two people who are refusing to cooperate with the grand jury. Quote, "Hi, my name is Dennison. I will be reading a statement on behalf of Dennison Williams and Leland Plant. The two of us were subpoenaed to the secret grand jury to begin meeting on Thursday investigating anarchists. We are releasing this statement to make clear our intention to resist the grand jury. We will not cooperate with their investigation. If we appear before the grand jury, we will not answer any questions other than our names. If we are asked additional questions, we will invoke our First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendment rights. Under no circumstances will we talk about other people. Hey, FBI and grand juries, don't think you can stop anarchists with house raids and repression. These tools make people angry and lead to retaliation. When protest is outlawed, only outlaws can protest, and you don't want to go there.
Alone. No more nights. Blood and fire. No more nights. No blood and fire. Won't no more nights. Won't go.
On the 4th and 6th of August, there were a pair of animal rights protests against Air France KLM, one of the last airlines on Earth that will fly monkeys and other animals to vivisection laboratories such as Huntington Life Sciences. The first protest was outside the French ambassador's home on Saturday night, the 4th of August, and the second was at the offices of Patton Boggs, the main lobbyist in the U.S. for Air France KLM, on Monday, the 6th of August. On the 4th of August, protesters showed up outside the home of the French ambassador in Washington, D.C., demanding that Air France KLM stop flying animals to so-called research laboratories.
The French government owned 18.6% of all shares in Air France KLM.
Air France KLM, and what did Air France KLM do?
Air France KLM is the largest transporter of laboratory animals to vivisection laboratories around the world.
Does that include primates?
That includes primates.
No justice, no peace, until the monkeys are released! No justice, no peace,
until the monkeys are released!
Because the French ambassador in this residence is complicit in the transporting of primates for vivisection by the airline Air France. Air France is one of the only airlines left in the entire world that will continue in this barbaric practice. All airlines will no longer transport primates for vivisection. Amerijet Airlines will no longer transport primates for vivisection. China Airlines will no longer transport primates for vivisection. If the Chinese government is refusing to continue to engage in this practice because they know it is so outdated and cruel, then you know that France can make the same compassionate decision and stop transporting primates for vivisection.
Protesters also had a message for the French ambassador's neighbors in nearby houses.
So we apologize for the inconvenience, but if you disapprove of something that countless countries and countless airlines across the world have chosen now to take a stand against, then please visit your neighbor and let him know that you do not feel that what he is doing is right and continue to advocate for Air France to transport primates.
Protesters even came up with a new meaning for Air France KLM, saying the KLM stands for Killing Little Monkeys. Air France Killing Little Monkeys.
Air France is
killing little monkeys.
Air France is
killing little monkeys.
The French government
killing little monkeys.
The French government is
killing little monkeys.
You may not be concerned about the primates being transported by Air France, but you should be very concerned about this. The rising tide of activists taking action against the transport of primates for vivisection. We know that activists in your home country are taking action to stop this barbarity. And activists here will continue to be outside of your residence until Air France joins the legions of countless airlines that have also decided to stop transporting primates for vivisection. You should be ashamed of yourself and of the bloody stain that you have put on the French flag by allowing Air France to continue engaging in this practice. We'll be back!
We'll be back!
We'll be back!
We'll be back!
We'll be
back!
It didn't take long for protesters to return to a target associated with Air France. 2 days later, protesters descended on the D.C. offices of lobbying firm Patton Boggs, which is the main lobbyist for Air France in the United States.
They can't stop us, let them try!
On the 6th of August, the campaign in D.C. against Air France for flying monkeys and other animals to vivisection labs to be tortured continued with a visit to their main lobbyist, Patton Boggs.
Lobbyist is Patton Boggs. They lobby for Air France.
Air France, they lobby for Bristol-Myers Squibb, and they also lobby for Walmart.
For Walmart, oh God.
Rolling in on Patton Boggs, lobbyist, Air France.
Are you out here today at 42550 M Street Northwest? This is the D.C. offices of Patton Boggs. Chief lobbyist responsible for lobbying for Air France KLM. Air France KLM is the largest transporter of primates and other animals to vivisection labs across the globe. We are here taking a stand against the primate trade. We are here taking a stand against vivisection. We are not backing down, and we're never going to compromise Patton Boggs until you drop Air France KLM.
Hey, bunch of primates, stop it and
that's right, Patton Boggs. Just ask the French ambassador about animal rights protesters coming to people's houses. Better yet, dump Air France as a client, or convince Air France to stop flying monkeys and other animals to vivisection laboratories like Huntington Life Science for a life of torture. The campaign in D.C. and globally to close Huntington Life Sciences, a contract animal research or vivisection laboratory, continues. Huntington Life Sciences has been caught in 7 separate undercover investigations doing things like punching beagle puppies in the face and dissecting live monkeys without any kind of anesthesia. In addition, scientists who've gone public about it when told to pencil in test results without regard for what the studies actually show have been fired and sued. The campaign against Huntington Life Sciences works by going after bankers and stockbrokers, of whom they now have none, going after customers and suppliers, and in this way, gradually getting Huntington Life Sciences into an economic chokehold so they can be strangled once and for all. Suppliers, customers, and other collaborators of Huntington Life Sciences have attempted to respond with injunctions prohibiting any kind of protest at all in violation of the First Amendment, but usually this just causes the campaign to escalate. An example of that would be what's happening now with a campaign against Danaher, the corporate parent of Beckman Coulter, which has gotten injunctions against protests in California. Beckman Coulter is a supplier of laboratory equipment to puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences. Their contract is worth only $85,000, yet they are suing animal activists in Los Angeles who are protesting this contract instead of dumping Huntington Life Sciences. Their corporate parent is Danaher Corporation. Danaher's senior vice president, Jonathan Graham, lives in D.C. in Upper Northwest. On the 4th of August, animal rights activists showed up outside his home at almost 10 p.m. at night.
Good evening, neighbors of Ordway Street. We are here at your neighbor's house, Jonathan Graham, who's the senior vice president of Danaher Corporation. Danaher Corporation is a parent company of Beckman Coulter, which supplies lab equipment to Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day of the week for products like bleach, Splenda, toothpaste, and cutting lotion, and Vioxx. Vioxx was tested at Huntington Life Sciences and went on to kill tens of thousands of people. Jonathan Graham, your involvement with Beckman and your Beckman Coulter's involvement with Huntington Life Sciences is not going unnoticed. And we are here outside of your home demanding you sever all ties with Huntington Life Sciences. HLS!
Shut them down!
HLS!
Shut them down!
You know exactly what you need to do. You need to go in Monday morning, tell Mr. Cobb, have a meeting with your accomplice, and tell them to cancel Beckman Coulter's contract with Huntington Life Sciences. It's very simple, Mr. Graham.
No, Mr. Graham.
Big Will.
Until next time. You should have just had a meeting.
Sleep tight. Don't let the bed bugs bite.
Your neighbors better get used to it.
You really should have had a meeting, Johnny.
Danaher Corporation would really benefit from dumping Beckman Coulter. It was only 2 days later, on the 6th of August, Monday, that protesters showed up outside Danaher's offices in D.C.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com. On the 11th of August, D.C. area women's rights activists held the second annual Slut Walk, protesting the ridiculous assumption that how a woman dresses could ever be consent to being raped. The slut walks began in 2011 after a stupid Toronto cop called a woman a slut and said that she had consented to being raped because of how she was dressed. Now the slut walks are held in many cities, including Washington, D.C.
We do not have a choice. How we make meaning of it, what we do with it after that, is ours. So I've got a story for you. Savannah Dietrich is a 17-year-old, and she is my new hero. She comes from Kentucky. She had an incident not too long ago where she drank until she passed out, and then she was violently raped by two men who took turns raping and filming. And then they tweeted the films, and they went everywhere. So, as you can imagine, they got arrested because they didn't even have to report. It was everywhere. What happened is that the judge made a deal and entered into a plea bargain without consulting her lawyer and without consulting Savannah. And part of the plea deal for these two rapists was that she would not talk about what happened.
Yeah.
So here's an example of how we can make choice. Because what Savannah did instead was she tweeted the names Austin Zender and Will Frey to the world. And then they slapped her with a charge of contempt, and she was facing jail time and a big fine. And then people from all over the world came together and put so much pressure on the judge that they dropped the charges.
Yeah! It's better!
There were many other speakers at Slutwalk 2012 talking about horrific personal stories of things that had happened to them, of being raped in some cases by trusted relatives. I'm not going to put their stories on the air. Suffice to say, it was said at the event that up to 1 in 3 women in this country may face sexual assault. Believe me, that has nothing to do with how you're dressed.
Well, DNA, it's natural. It's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one depended on another, and so the circle it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
The Monsanto Corporation, an international leader in biotechnology, is currently spending millions of dollars on an advertising campaign to convince the public and politicians that the genetically engineered food crops that they've developed and are marketing is helping to feed more people, protecting natural resources, and promoting biodiversity. Monsanto's slogan is, "We're all in this together, producing more, conserving more, improving lives." But the Union of Concerned Scientists, which has studied Monsanto's claims, challenges many of the company's assertions of benefits for agriculture and society. To that end, the union has produced their own series of advertisements placed on Washington, D.C. buses and transit stations near the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with the goal of setting the record straight on genetically modified crops. In one ad, the union declares that Monsanto's Roundup Ready crops, genetically engineered to tolerate the company's Roundup herbicide, increased herbicide use by an estimated 383 million pounds between 1996 and 2008, and monarch butterflies have laid 81% fewer eggs thanks to habitat loss since Roundup Ready was introduced. Another ad asserts that Monsanto's products aren't the answer to meeting the needs of a hungry planet. The union says that genetically engineered crops have so far done little to improve yields in the U.S. Your reporter spoke with Karen Perry Stillerman, senior analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists Food and Environment Program, who challenges the Monsanto Corporation's claims on the benefits of genetically engineered food crops.
Well, I should say that Monsanto is not the only company that's doing this, but they are the industry leader, and so we've looked at the industry, but we've also looked some at Monsanto's specific products. And so a couple of years ago, in 2009, actually, we produced a report called Failure to Yield, and we decided to look at these problems one by one and the claims one by one. So we wanted to look. They were saying at the time, Monsanto was running a big ad campaign on public radio, in fact, and places like New Yorker magazine and other places, and they were specifically saying that their seeds were increasing yields. So we looked at that, and my colleague Doug Gray and Sherman looked at the data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the scientific literature to really kind of tease out, well, what is the situation with the crops that Monsanto is and other companies are genetically engineering? Are they really increasing in yields? And is the genetic splicing that they're doing, is that what's responsible? And what we found is, you know, of course, over the past decade or more, yields of crops like corn and soybeans have gone up dramatically. Farmers are producing more. But when we really teased out what was responsible, we found out that it was mostly attributable to just common plant breeding and improved farming techniques, and that in fact the genes that the companies were putting in there, you know, one of which Monsanto uses to make the crops tolerate herbicides, weed killers, and so you can plant the crop and then spray herbicides over it once it's growing, and the crop itself doesn't die, but the weeds do, and that's a really great thing for farmers. But what it doesn't do is help increase yields, and so if we're interested in increasing food production, that doesn't do it.
Karen, in your research looking at some of the problems associated with genetically modified crop seeds, I read a report that said that Roundup Ready crops, which are resistant to that particular Roundup pesticide, may be associated with a reduction in the population of monarch butterflies in the Midwest. Do you want to tell our listeners a bit about that?
Well, it's part of the problem with agriculture on an industrial scale as we're practicing it today. You know, the Roundup and other herbicides are used to keep fields weed free, and as the price of things like corn has gone up in recent years, farmers have planted more and more of it, so they're leaving less and less land in sort of a more natural, weedy state. And monarch butterflies just happen to be a species that rely on certain kinds of weeds to lay their eggs in and to eat. So it is a problem that the more herbicides that are used and the, you know, more land area that is kept free of weeds of all kinds, the less kind of diversity that you're going to see. And it's not necessarily something that Monsanto set out to do, but it is an impact of the industrial kind of agriculture that their products really perpetuate and exacerbate.
So, Karen, what's the objective of the Union of Concerned Scientists campaign here? What would you like to see in terms of new regulations on companies like Monsanto that produce genetically modified crop seeds? Is that where you want to go with this in terms of having more stringent regulation here, or is it just to give the public and farmers more awareness of these claims which you believe are false?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, we do want to see these kinds of experimental crops or genetically engineered crops regulated more tightly for lots of reasons, because the regulation is pretty lax and, you know, in terms of really being able to sort out things like health impacts and environmental impacts. We'd like to see more study done, and the regulations don't require that at all. But I think more importantly, what we'd like to see is the USDA in particular and Congress in the Farm Bill, which is the piece of legislation that Congress debates every 5 years that really sets the rules and incentives for agriculture. We'd like to see those folks really get more serious about alternatives because, as I mentioned, the genetic engineering is complicated. It takes a long time to produce these crops and huge investments. And what we find is that simple plant breeding, the kind that is done at universities and by researchers at the U.S. Department of Agriculture itself, can actually achieve the kinds of goals that Monsanto and its competitors talk about more quickly and more cheaply and just more efficiently generally. But those plant breeders are really starved for resources in recent years. So we'd really like to see more research dollars going into simple plant breeding of the kind that can produce results.
That was Karen Perry Stillerman, Program Manager and Senior Analyst with the Union of Concerned Scientists Food and Environment Program. Find links examining Monsanto's claims on genetically engineered food crops by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.